So the date is the 24th of July 2015. I'm here in 32 Lincoln's Inn with John Worrell, interviewing him as part of the LSE 120th Anniversary Oral History Project. John, can you state your full name and your date of birth?
John Worrell, 27/11/1946.
So can you tell me when you first came to LSE?
Well, in a couple of months' time, in September, it will be 50 years since I first walked down Houghton Street as an 18-year-old beginning student, and I've been here more or less ever since.
When was that?
1965. Yeah, 1965.
What were your first impressions of campus? What did you think?
Well, I'd reconcile myself to the fact that it wasn't really a campus in the same sense as, I don't know, Exeter or Oxford or somewhere. So I wasn't too surprised. It was exciting to be in London, given that it was the first time I'd been in London, actually. A working-class lad from Lancashire, it was all very exciting in a way. I later came to think it was pretty grimy and not very inspiring, but physically. But at the time, I think I was just too excited to being away from home and to take much notice, really.
And what did you come here to study?
Well, that's an interesting story. Basically, what happened was that it was a late decision because I was supposed to be going into what they call the scholarship year to go to Oxford and Cambridge, which at that time meant if you only went to a grammar school rather than a posh school, you had a third year in the sixth form, and I decided I couldn't, at the last minute, I couldn't face that, and I was desperate to get out of Lee in Lancashire, where I came from. And so I had a quick decision on the basis of a 15-minute careers interview, the only interview I ever had at school of this nature. It was decided that I should do something. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I liked everything at school. I was one of those boring people. But I did like maths above everything else, and that's what I was good at. We decided very quickly that I wouldn't be an engineer or anything, and that I said the only thing I could think of was really I'd quite like to be rich, but I'd be hopeless at business. So it was decided that I should be an actuary. I didn't have any idea what an actuary did, but sounded like a good idea because apparently they were the highest paid profession on average. So if we weren't going to go into business and we were going to be rich, it was a good idea to be an actuary. So I said, okay, well, where should I go to be an actuary? Well, LSE would be the best place to specialise in statistics. Now, at that time, there was this general degree called the BSc Econ that everybody did, and you nominated a special subject, but there was always the possibility of changing, particularly from more mathematically demanding to less mathematically demanding options. So basically what happened was that I took... Everybody took some economics, some politics, some history, and then you had two free options, one of which was the maths I did. And the other, since I'd done stats A-level, which was rather unusual, I didn't do the stats paper, I did logic instead, which was taught in the philosophy department. And as part of the suggested timetable for that were lectures on Problems of Philosophy by Sir Karl Popper. And they had absolutely no relationship whatsoever to the logic course, and most of the people who were doing logic soon dropped out. But I was absolutely riveted by... I can't now reconstruct why, because I came to have a lesser view of Popper than... certainly than I had at the time, but he had such charisma in a funny sort of quiet way, because he obviously believed whatever anybody else believed, that he was a great philosopher. He'd solved the problem of induction, or so he thought. He name-dropped shamelessly his correspondence with Einstein and various conversations on various park benches with Viennese and notables. But I was completely overwhelmed, although I'm very happy doing statistics. I decided that I would switch my special subject, which you could very straightforwardly, to philosophy, which was then very much a fledgling teaching department that had been a small service department, didn't have its own specialist degrees and so on. For my second and third year, I switched to the philosophy department. As I've often said, so it was all Popper's fault that I never got rich. Then I had a second stroke of luck. I'm sure it was the right decision in the end, though I agonised a bit about it. It turned out there was only one option in the philosophy degree at that time. It went for the special subject years, the second and third years. And that was either mathematical logic or moral and political philosophy, I think. And the rule turned out to be that if you chose mathematical logic, which no one else in my year did, you got Imre Lakatos as your undergraduate tutor, as they were called then. And, well, that was he was an absolutely amazing man, Popper's sort of successor in a way, along with John Watkins. Because Popper retired officially, although he kept coming to his seminar in 67, I think. Anyway, Lakatos was absolutely amazing. He brought me into his room, asked me into his room. He said, right, I won't try and imitate the Hungarian accent, but he said, right, I do not want to see you again until you have completed the following tasks. And he gave me this list of ferocious-sounding books in maths and physics and set theory and logic. And I had to read them all, do all the exercises, and then if I did that, I could come back and see him again. I think he thought he would never see me again. But I did manage to work through all these things, and I became his disciple, I suppose, in a way, but not in an uncritical way. Disciple's the wrong word. Anyway, he set me off on my career. He thought that I could do something useful in philosophy, and he encouraged me once I got my first degree to do a PhD, and that's what I did again at the LSE, though sadly Imre died before I completed the PhD. But then once I'd got my PhD, I got appointed to the staff in 1971 as a lecturer in philosophy of science. I was tempted now and again to buy offers from America later on, but my wife and I had a year in America when I was on sabbatical. She's a doctor, and she hated American medicine, so it's quite clear that we couldn't move as a couple, and that's what I wanted it still to be, obviously. So, and there is nowhere else. Given LSE philosophy is a very niche sort of subject, it doesn't do the range of topics that other philosophy departments in the country tend to do. It's very specialist, following Popper's own interest in philosophy of science, philosophy of social science, and it's easily the best place to be in the UK, so there was no temptation to move. So, although it would have been nice in a way to have a certain amount of variety, I've been at LSE right through from 18 to whatever, 68 that I am now.
How did you find the other students that you were with at LSE with?
Well, yeah, I mean, in the first year I was a bit lonely, I think, because at any rate at LSE, it turned out that Passfield Hall, which was the only hall of residence then, lost my application form. And so, and by the time I chased it up, because I'm rather nervous, working class lad, as I said, it was the place was already full. So I finished up in Commonwealth Hall in Cartwright Gardens, which was a University of London hall. And I think very few, if any, other LSE students were there. So my friendships were with people from other colleges, principally University College. In the second year, when you had a sort of departmental identity, because I was then doing special subject philosophy and sort of in the philosophy department, there were a couple of people who also went on to have academic careers in the year above, which was the very first year that there'd been a special subject in philosophy, one called Colin Howson and the other called Tony Ongar, that I formed good friendship with, and spent an awful lot of time in the Three Tons Bar in the basement of the St. Clement's building, absolutely horrible place, with, having cigarettes sponged off me by Colin House, I remember. But yeah, it wasn't a spectacularly friendly place. I don't think it is even now, in the way that a genuine campus university would be. But I had a good enough time.
And was there a big experience? Like, was it quite different being a faculty member from being a student? Was that a bit of an eye opener?
Yeah, I mean, I'd gone through a. Is it okay?
Yeah.
I'd gone through a sort of transitional period anyway, because I taught logic classes in particular, some philosophy of science classes, and a logic class that I met my wife. Not that she was my wife then. And I'd been like Toshi's research assistant for a year. So it wasn't as much, when I finally did get appointed, it felt more evolutionary than much of a change. It was interesting, obviously, being on the inside of decisions about changing the syllabus and so on, but I didn't think of it as a major shift, really.
Was there any places on campus that were your favourite places to go?
Well, the Three Tons Bar I've already mentioned, though it was very dank. But they had a terrific jukebox, and I was always massively, still am, into rock and roll. That was one place, I guess. Flory's on what was then the third floor, because what's now the first floor of the old building was the mezzanine floor, didn't count. It's now called the fourth floor, but it was then the third floor. And there was this old trooper called Flory who ran it and bossed all the students around. It's now Cafe something or other. Anyway, it's that one on the left as you come out of the lifts, well, depending which lift you get, of course, but anyway, the one that towards the Houghton Street, go off to the refectory. I spent more time there, I think, than in the refectory, but some time there too as well.
Did you meet Flory?
Oh, Flory was very much in evidence. Yeah, you couldn't help but meet her. Yeah. In fact, she waited on. There was a freshers' dinner. Absolutely, all first time I ever had wine in my life. Actually, I remember trying to look sophisticated. There was a freshers' dinner on the Saturday. There wasn't a week like there is now. There was a day, basically, the Saturday, and then there was a little coach trip, I think, around London on Sunday. But the Saturday was there were some very boring speeches by LSE notables, and then this dinner that Flory was organising the waiting on for. That was the first time I came across her. I got very ill that day because I drank a lot of wine. But anyway, that's another story.
Were you involved in any sort of student groups or student politics?
Well, everybody was involved with the Gates and everything. Of course, the it was a bit difficult because I was a graduate student. It was a wonderful time when it was closed, because that's when I really, I'd been working so hard to make sure I got my first that I'd sort of missed out on some of the student experience. But when the place was closed, and Lakatoshi, who was my supervisor, was very much otherwise engaged, because he was a leading person on the anti-student side, I had a wonderful time in a terrible flat in Harlesden, staying up all night playing bridge and stuff, watching the Mexico Olympics. Anyway, I wasn't the member. Well, I played some table tennis and I played some cricket, so I knew people through that. But other than that, I wasn't a member of any particular group, but did get invited. I sat in briefly, had my fingers stamped on by Colin Howson, who'd in the meantime, the student I mentioned, in the meantime, also been appointed to staff, or been appointed to the staff before me. I was still a student. But I was very much a sort of fellow traveller, really. I didn't... I never stayed overnight, for example. I just liked my bed too much, really. So I let other people do that hard work, and when it came back the following morning. I think if I'd had a girlfriend, it would have been different. I mean, I see girlfriend at the time, but I took the soft option in that respect. And then, of course, this didn't make me very popular with Lakatos, and we had lots of debates about it, and I don't know, really, in the end, it was all... It just seems funny, you know, but now, in retrospect, it wasn't... In a way, it wasn't, for the vast majority of people, it wasn't serious, but it was taken very seriously. You know, people really did think that what had gone on in Paris as well and beforehand, that, you know, the state might crumble, and the police were very heavy-handed in their involvement. It was obviously a great shame that this poor porter had a heart attack that racked up the emotional heat as well. So, yeah, I was a bit involved in that, but it mostly... The main gift it gave me was a nice breathing space to have some fun before I started real work on my PhD.
How do you think that your role or your job at LSE has changed over the years?
Well, in many ways it hasn't. I mean, obviously there's all sorts of extra technological things that massive impact, obviously, of word processing and so on. I think the department as a whole has become much more democratic than it was then. It was very much, the most senior professor was the head of the department and stayed head of the department. There was no moving it around to the professors, and there was very little discussion. We had very few departmental meetings, actually, and very little when, for example, new jobs were coming up. There was very little consultation with the non-professors in the department. Nowadays, we're fantastically democratic, and of course, we have people in it. Give presentations. It's that side of things is much different. But the teaching's, you know, much the same. More students, obviously, many more students than there were then. I don't know, when I first started teaching logic, there might have been 40 people, I guess, and now it's getting on for 200. Many more graduate students. There could maybe be there were two other people doing PhDs, I think, at the same time, maybe three, and maybe 10 MSc students, now, massively more now. And the department's bigger in terms of teaching staff, so all those things have changed, but not in any really interestingly radical way, I think, apart from the increasing democracy.
What are the students at LSE like to teach?
Yeah, great. I mean, part of the not having been anywhere else syndrome is I've not got anything to compare with in a way, but they are, you know, many of them anyway. Obviously, we get the third best A-level scores of anywhere in the country, if we're talking about home students now. Very many bright, especially German students, we seem to have fantastically good ones. Very bright and inquisitive and very often a real pleasure to teach, yeah. I think, certainly when I've been in the States, I've found, you know, students there mostly not so good as the LSE ones, but maybe anyway, I've been very happy with the LSE students, yeah.
Have you got involved with any of the staff networks or staff events here, or any of the sort of staff social activities?
Yeah, well, I was for many years the captain, team secretary, fixture secretary, chief cook and bottle washer, whatever they call it, of the LSE staff cricket team. That must have gone on for 30 years. I retired more often than Frank Sinatra, I think, because I kept thinking I couldn't do it anymore, it wasn't as good as it used to be, and then I just missed it too much. So, yeah, all of my many of my fondest memories of the LSE are actually of Berrylands rather than the campus here. It's a great shame that it's so little used, really. Of course, same problem being in the centre of London. It means you've got to go miles to get to it. But it's great. It was great. And I made lots of friends through that. That was the main, I think, then social thing. Nowadays, well, we have a very sociable department. We're blessed, I think, in how well we get on with each other. There are no big rivalries or people not talking to each other, as one hears about in other departments. And in particular, we now have a rock and roll band in the department, of which I'm the Führer, as they say. So a lot of my free time goes into that. We play at departmental parties and do the odd wedding and birthday party and stuff. And it's great fun.
Is that made up of staff and faculty? Or
Staff and students, you mean? Yeah. Faculty, mostly. Everybody is connected with the philosophy department in some way. So we have me on guitar, Alex Verhoeven, who's associate professor in the department, is the singer, Max Steuer, who's emeritus from the economics department but still teaches in our centre for philosophy and the natural and social sciences. He plays bass. Roman Frigg, my colleague, plays drums. And then we have various now former students. So one of our former students also sings and has now become Mrs. Verhoeven. And we have two saxophone players who are both... one graduated this year, one graduated the year before. We have a sit-in drummer when Roman's away, who's, again, just graduated this year, and will hang around, I hope. Yeah, so that is the basis for a lot of social interaction. It's great fun.
Well, what do you feel like, in light of all your time here at LSE, as a student and also as a faculty member, mm-hmm. what do you feel is the main highlights, the things that you look back on and really feel good about?
Well, I suppose if my wife gets to hear this, I better say it was meeting my wife. I'll say something else in a minute. But, yeah, I mean... I actually met her in a logic class that I was taking. I should think nowadays it might be regarded as a little bit iffy, but I wasn't on the staff. I was on the staff by the time she graduated. But like I told her, it was very clear that I shouldn't mark any of her exams, which was obviously the right thing to do. So I wrote a song for the band called Ain't No Possible World about meeting her. I've made it a logic lecture because I wanted it to rhyme with Getcha, and class didn't. So, but other than that, it's the story. So that was back in 69, I suppose. Big events. Let me think. Well, there was the time that the staff, in the first time in ever, I think, beat the students in the annual cricket match. That was, and I got, I don't think I quite got to 50, but I got about 48. And did quite a nice stumping down the leg side of the main student batsman, which I remember very proudly. Centenary events, I remember running a session for the department. Various conferences, one for Popper's 80th birthday, I think one for Popper's 90th birthday. There was a very big conference that we ran that was organised by Lacazash, but sadly died before it came off, which was funded by Spiro Latsis in Nafplion in Greece, and met very many, pretty well all the world's top philosophers of science were invited there. I was still just starting in my career, so that was a very big event. Lots of eminent speakers at the Popper Seminar, Noam Chomsky and other people that I remember very vividly.
So you feel that working at LSE has given you the chance to meet a lot of high-profile specialists in your field that you might not have else?
Oh, I definitely wouldn't have done. I mean, without some sort of position, and it was through the LSE. I mean, the LSE is still, Popper is remains a very major figure in the history of the subject, and Lakatos too. So we are, you know, internationally very eminent departments still. I mean, we've not got the figures as romantic as Popper and Lakatos. That's what they were, but still very eminent. So you know, one does meet all the people. It's amazing, really, to think back. You know, how different things could have been. If I hadn't heard Popper's lectures, I would probably be a very bored actuary somewhere, although very rich, as I said. But yeah, it was. I feel very grateful to have been of that generation where, you know, I got a full maintenance grant, which you could then live on. If you, this is assuming that your parents weren't making a lot of money. My dad was a plumber, so at that point he wasn't making a lot of money. Later he would have turned in his grave at what plumbers now charge, but then he wasn't making a lot of money, so you could live on that. And I really feel sorry for current students with the amounts of debt that they graduate with. It's a very different story. I graduated with no debt whatsoever and then got a British Academy scholarship for the PhD, and very, very charmed life for somebody from my background. I feel very grateful for it.
What do you feel have been the main challenges being here at LSE?
Challenges? Well, obviously, it's just being in the job is quite a challenge if you really want to be a successful academic, and you want, that's not the right way to put it. If you really are grabbed by the bug of trying to push the frontiers of knowledge forward, sounds pretentious, but it's what you're trying to do. You know, it's hard work. Research is hard work. Thinking through things as carefully as philosophy in the analytic tradition requires is very often a difficult, painful process. So, nailing yourself to your desk and getting stuff produced is always a challenge. Getting certain students through their PhD is also very often a challenge, though fortunately we now are able to be much more selective than we were for a while, so that's not so problematic. I think, getting used to various ill-advised innovations like the REF and so on, having to worry about impact and all this stuff defined in a very weird way, I think that's been a challenge, because obviously the continuing prosperity of the department depends, or school and through the department depends on it. So you have to take it seriously, even if you don't think it's a very well motivated enterprise.
What do you think the future of LSE will look like?
Not very good at prophecies, really. I think it looks very right. I mean, well, let me be a bit more analytical. I do think that there's been an inevitable trend towards the industrialisation of the tertiary education setup. It does feel that we've been lucky, but whether that luck will continue, I don't know. But it does feel like it's all monetary targets and so on. And I think it's sad that. We're starting to think in terms of being transparent about so-called cross-subsidisation. So people in, management, accountancy, financial economics, they can charge more or less anything for their degrees, because people perceive that those degrees are worth money in terms of their lifelong earnings, whereas the general perception, incorrect, but the general perception is that philosophy is, getting a philosophy degree is a passport to the dole queue. It's not at all true, but It's you can't sell it. You know, if you've got an MSc in philosophy of science, it's not going to, in itself, it's not going to, or you, it's not perceived as helping you make money later on. And so, you know, there are fantastic salaries now paid in the management department, for example, compared to what the rest of us get because of that. And I don't mind. I'm happy people get large amounts of money and a lot more than I do. But I think the way it's now been conceptualised in terms of we have to be open about cross subsidy is a miscategorisation of the situation. I mean, the only reason that these departments, all power to their elbow, or part of the reason that they can make that is the reputation of the LSE, which is built on other departments like ours that aren't so targeted at degrees that are worth money on in the marketplace. I sort of worry, you know, once people start thinking of it that way, that, well, why should we? You know, we can make all our money out of management students and financial economic students, and why should we be doing weird things like, you know, worrying about. So it worries me a bit that, you know, that as it were, purely academic disciplines like that aren't so obviously saleable, like philosophy, might get squeezed out. That's I mean, no sign of it yet. I think we're thought of well in the school, but that's a source of tension that might grow into something a bit more worrying.
In light of everything that we've said, you've answered quite a few of the questions that I had.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything else you'd like to add? Like, is there anything that you feel like I haven't covered that you wanted to talk about?
Give me a second or two.
Yeah, I can pause it.
Hmm.